Take Command is presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide-leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
At Blinds.com, it's not just about window treatments. It's about you, your style, your space, your way. Whether you DIY or want the pros to handle it all, you'll have the confidence of knowing it's done right. From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Shop Blinds.com Labor Day Mega Sale happening now. Save up to 50% site-wide, plus a free measure. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Anybody, anywhere, anywhere.
It's time to take command.
The Cardiac Commanders are the Clutch Commanders!
With former NFL tight end, Logan Paulson.
This pass caught by Paulson, the tight end.
And from 106.7 The Fan, Grant Paulson.
Welcome in to Take Command, however you found us. Thank you for doing so. You can watch us on the 106.7 The Fan and 980 YouTubes. You can subscribe to our podcast and get the audio wherever you get anything that you listen to. It's Logan Paulson, Grant Paulson. We are here at least twice a week, and with games starting, we will be here three times a week moving forward. We're excited about that. Speaking of exciting, though, Logan, we got a 53-man roster. It is here. Adam Peters and the Commanders whittled their roster all the way down to 53. And I got to say, a little bit chalky. No huge surprises.
Yeah, no huge surprises. But I think it's, you know, kind of how they handled the offseason. You could tell, like, some staffs around the league, they do a really good job of not really good job. It's just kind of, there's no right way to do it, of identifying their roster, identifying their core early. And I think you saw that in some of the preseason games where you have 30 guys not playing and it becomes very clear, like, how they view certain guys in comparison to other guys. And then you kind of look at the playtime metrics, and a guy that we're going to talk about a lot when we talk about the defense is Cleveland Farrell. Like, you could just tell that because of how he was playing in the preseason, there was a pretty good shot that he wasn't going to make the roster. So I just think this is how this team chose to handle it. And I think it's smart in some ways, I think, in terms of, like, keeping guys healthy, keeping guys safe. And so, it was kind of pretty chalky, I guess, when you kind of come down to it.
It's funny that you put it that way, or interesting that you put it that way, because actually one of the words I would use is they seem pretty transparent with what they're thinking. Like, I've covered groups before where it's very cloak and dagger. And I remember times where, like, the part of the practice we're at, Mike Shanahan has starters going, and then we waddle up the hill to go sit down in the media room, and then other guys run out there, they're going to start on Sunday. Like, what we saw at camp, what fans saw, the usage in the preseason, the fact that, like, the only pick in the 2 years of the Peters era now in the front office that they released very early, so that guy Dominique Hampton could try to go get work. They kind of knew, hey, you're out. They told Brian Robinson before the final preseason game, this isn't looking good for you. I don't know how well that went, and next thing you know, there's a divorce. But, like, you get what I'm saying, is it's not like they're playing games, and I kind of like that about how they operate.
Yeah, and I think back to my time in Atlanta with Dan, and he operated in a very similar way. It was like, this is how we view you now, and things can change, obviously. But I remember that was the first time in my career where I didn't play in a preseason game, was with Dan in Atlanta, because I was going to be the second kind of blocking Y tight end and didn't have anybody else on the roster that can do it. So he's like, you pretty much made the team. And so that is really helpful in certain situations with, like, a guy in my position, because I was like, oh, okay, now I can start prepping for week one and start working on these things. And it gave me a lot of confidence. But the next year, the shoe was on the other foot, and I was playing in a lot more preseason games, and I was like, this isn't looking good. And it kind of helps lay the landscape a little bit. So as a player, that can be difficult. But I think there are pros and cons to both, right? I think, you know, Mike was always super paranoid about what the other teams knew or what they could glean from media availability of practice. So he was always kind of thinking about how to give, like, a false narrative to the media. And Dan, I think throughout, and Adam throughout, have been pretty transparent in how they're thinking about stuff. Like, that's one of the things I really appreciate about Dan in his press conferences. He's incredibly consistent. He's incredibly on message. And I think that's really helpful. Again, I think about it from a player's perspective. It's really easy because this is what we're talking about. Dan sets the narrative. I support it. And so I think it's great. I don't know if there's a right or wrong way to do it, but this is one way. And I think it's pretty effective for what they've done so far.
All right, so let's run through the 53 here. We'll go offense this segment, defense next segment, and then I want to get into some of the more interesting decisions and some practice squad stuff at the end of the pod on Take Command today. But we'll start on offense. Let's go to the quarterback room. The debate was two or three. They did keep Josh Johnson as a third quarterback. You know, it feels to me like that the narrative out there is, well, maybe they would have gone outside the organization. You talked about maybe calling Jeff Driskel and having him back in the conversation. Do we think that they're still doing some shopping there, or is that you move forward with three? And how much of this is because of the Marcus Mariota Achilles being a question mark that you felt like you had to keep a third?
So let's break that up into two parts. Do I think they're still shopping? Yes, but I think Adam Peters is always shopping. I think that's one of the signs of a good GM. And one of the things that I've appreciated about him since the jump, pretty much, is even last year with how he handled the practice squad, he views that in a very specific way. If I like my evaluation on a guy, if I think there's some talent there, let's get him in our building. And if you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing on a practice squad, I have no problem moving on. I'm not tied to you. I want to make the best roster I can possibly make. And so I do think that this is an indication of, I think they are confident that Marcus Mariota is getting healthier, but I think there probably is still some question or some reservation. And do I think Marcus plays week one? Yes. But just in case there's a setback, just in case there's something going on, Josh Johnson, with his experience, has shown an ability to win NFL football games, and he can manage an offense. And there's something to having a backup on the roster that has that ability. Do I think they're still looking for somebody? Probably, right? I think they're probably looking for somebody who's maybe a little bit more talented, maybe a little bit more upside. But I think Josh Johnson, throughout his career, has shown I can run an offense. I can put us in good situations. The operation is a big part of that. And so I think that's what you're looking at there, is you've got a guy you can trust while you are very confident that Marcus Mariota is going to be back.
Nine starts, 45 games in the league over nine seasons where he's gotten on the field. And obviously the 39-year-old's been in the league way more years than that. But that was maybe one of the surprises in terms of Johnson making the roster. I just have to assume that this is an insurance policy because they haven't seen Mariota do a whole lot. And maybe if he was completely healthy and had practiced throughout the process, Daniels and Mariota are plenty enough in terms of the active roster. You've got Sam Hartman back on the practice squad, and then they'd have a decision to make if the worst case scenario happened and you were going to tap into Hartman on the practice squad, or you could sign a street free agent or something at that point. But they're dealing with what is, not with maybe what they want to be, and that is that Mariota has that Achilles. All right, the running back room. After the Brian Robinson trade, which we've talked about on previous pods, he goes to San Francisco. This, to me, was kind of a foregone conclusion. I mean, you nailed this. This was Eckler in his role, third down, pass catching back, 2-minute, 4-minute. You know, any kind of stuff at the end of halves, he's going to be out there. The big question, I guess, would be first and second down, who's getting more carries in week one? Who's getting more carries in week 10? And what does that look like for Ja'Cory Krosky, Merritt, and Chris Rodriguez? And then Jeremy McNichols, last man in.
Yeah, and I had some questions about whether they keep three here. But again, all those guys have had tremendous training camps, tremendous preseasons, really. Austin hasn't done so much in terms of preseason games, but in terms of when he's at practice, he's always locked in. You see the explosiveness, you see the twitch, you see the ability to kind of run a more diverse route tree than most backs. Bill Merritt has been outstanding. I think people have kind of overhyped him to a point where I'm like, hey man, take it easy. He's still a rookie, but the talent is there, the physicality there, the acceleration, the deceleration, the creativity, the vision is there. And I think you see a new kind of modeled Chris Rodriguez, a guy that's in better shape, better. He's always been a physical runner, but the conditioning, the speed, the burst seems to be at a different level. And that's jumped out to me, honestly, since day one of training camp. And it's great that the fans and the people who aren't at practice every day get to see his ability in the game. So you mentioned there, like, who gets the carries week one? To me, it's kind of scheme dependent, really. I think it's probably C-Rod early. That would be, you know, if there's a betting line, I'd probably take the odds on that. But the thing is, I do think the more talented player is Bill Kroski Merritt. And I think at some point he's going to start getting more and more touches as they get more and more comfortable with his health and with his ability to kind of digest and handle the workload of an NFL running back. And obviously you mentioned McNichols, very consistent talent. I think there's talent there too. So I'm not going to hedge on that. He's a talented player, got great physicality, is a commander in the truest sense of the word. Competitive, tough, good on special teams, great in third down protection, runs like an absolute lunatic when he's in there. And so I think you've got a really nice room of guys that complement each other well, while also setting a really high floor for the position.
Yeah, the compliment is what I want to get into with Kroski, Merritt, and Rodriguez specifically. Merritt, who ran the 4.45 40, Rodriguez, who's a massive physical thumping presence. I mean, a 225-pound back who's improved his speed. The speed metrics that they chart are better this summer for him than they've been at any point in his career. And that's with some hits he's taken and wear and tear over two seasons, still in his prime at 24 years old. So you said it's based on scheme. Are you talking about defensively what they're looking at, or maybe what they want to do on offense, or both? And what do you, we're still learning, Bill, as Dan Quinn said a couple weeks ago here in DC, but what do you think Kroski Merritt's going to do well in terms of run game scheme stuff? And what do you think Rodriguez excels in based on what you've seen?
So I think that's really interesting. And we've talked about this a little bit on the last show. I think Bill's superpower is his vision, like his ability to, and his ability to kind of snake and set up blocks, especially at the second level, in terms of run game, right? That offensive lineman gets off that double team. You see backs oftentimes, they cut it back too early. They don't set that block up. The linebacker plays over the top and makes a tackle. I think he's at his best because he's really patient. He's going to press that block. He's going to bring that defender to the lineman. And then he's explosive enough and twitchy enough to make the cut. I think the other thing that's important to consider here, and we're going to talk about this more with the offensive line, is yes, the backs have good, they have pitches that they like to throw, right? C-Rod is this power downhill shoulder square kind of guy. There's a little bit more elusiveness to Bill Kroski Merritt. But I also think about the landscape of the offensive line that they've cultivated. They've got these big athletic bodies. And I think, what do you do with guys like that, especially in gun situations? Obviously, if you were under center more, you'd be running, inside zone. You'd be running outside zone. You'd be running stuff that is very akin to like Kyle Shanahan or even Mike Shanahan, the old Houston Texans kind of stuff. But because they're in the pistol, how do you create those angles? And a lot of it is pin-pull stuff. And so I think it'll be really interesting to see who kind of asserts themselves in that pin-pull department. Austin Eckler has been excellent with that when given opportunity over the last couple of years. I think I would assume Bill's good at it because of his speed, his ability to kind of get to the perimeter, change the angles, stress the defense horizontally, and then find the cutback. So if the game plan is kind of feeding into that offensive line strength of this pin-pull perimeter run stuff, I would say Bill Kroski Merritt or Austin Eckler is going to get the first touch. But if we're going to start the game with a wham, a GT, a power, a trap, something that's more downhill, I want to see Chris Rodriguez do that, man, because the physicality that he ran with, especially on that second carry when they ran that influence trap in Cincinnati, I think speaks to his skill set at a really high level. So that's kind of what I'd say. It's not only the backs, it's also what you want to do with the offensive line, and then which player of those three, four if you include McNichols, maximizes the offensive line.
Just looking at his numbers, his first couple seasons in the league, Chris Rodriguez, each of the last 2 years has averaged sub 4 attempts per game in his role, when he's been elevated. So that number is obviously going to go up, and I can't wait for that. But his success rate as a ball carrier, which is viewed as getting 40% of a first down on first and 10, so 4 yards, 60% on second down, or 100% on third or fourth down of the yards needed, went from 47% in year one to 74% in year two. He made a pretty violent leap. He averages just shy of 5 yards per carry in his career. So there's a reason why Brian Robinson's not here beyond whatever happened with B-Rob, and they have been intrigued by this guy for some time. All right, let's talk about the players in front of those running backs. They're going to be paving the way. Tight ends, I don't think we have to spend a lot of time on, but curious if you have a thought here. So Ertz, if and when healthy, should be one of the higher targeted tight ends in the league and does good things in line. John Bates, you've called one of the best blocking tight ends at this point in the National Football League. we're getting to a point with Ben Sinnott where, I mean, he could be helpful as a blocker, but you kind of want to see something as a pass catcher at some point. It's just a matter of will he get opportunities. That's probably Ertz dependent in some way. And then Colson Yankoff, he fought his way onto the roster at a 52-yard catch and run, is very good on special teams. I think we both had all four of these guys in, so no surprises, but what's your storyline here?
Yeah, so I think for me, it's Ben Sinnott and his development, because it was fun watching him this offseason because I do think he's improved. I think you see the inline stuff. You mentioned it when I watched the Baltimore tape back. He's explosive, man. He's a strong kid. He really has a good coordination from his hips into the contact point of the block, which is really, really hard to teach and very, very hard to get a feel for as a player. Like, I had to spend a lot of times hitting a sled to get that feel, and he just seemed to kind of intuit that. I think the thing where I want to see the development is you see him, he's fast. I see a twitch. I see a deceleration, acceleration, which mirrors and matches his force plate numbers that he did at the combine. However, the thing that I would point to is, like, there is a little bit of nuance there. Like, I think back to the Cincinnati game where he's running that out route. And what I would say is, like, if I'm coaching Ben, and he's got a great coach in David Rye, who's a really smart dude, he coached me at UCLA, so all the respect for him, and I'm sure he's having this conversation with him, is on those routes, like, take one more revolution. Like, you're letting your depth be dictated by this defender. Push him deep. Get him to open his hips on this spin route, the second in that he ran versus New England. Run through that ball. That might be a catch, even though Sam Hartman gets credited for a bad throw. I think that's also a little bit on Ben. So what I want to see is, like, that maturation as a route runner. And people are like, oh, well, he's a second-round pick. He should already have that. When you watch this stuff at Kansas State, this was part of the story with him, is how is he going to develop and mature as a route runner? And it's cool to see the movement skills and the confidence starting to come along. Now it's just, can we put a little bit of polish on there? So maybe week six, maybe week seven, you start to see a more confident version of Ben Sinnott, and he is getting more touches. And all of a sudden, this team goes from an 11, 12 personnel team. Maybe we get more 13 personnel in there, because I do think his movement skills indicate you can create matchups. Now, that's something I'm watching. That's a storyline I'm going to be following. But you mentioned Colson Yankoff. Got to shout him out real quick. Great on teams, explosive, twitchy. And I love that undrafted free agent guy. So I'm in on Colson Yankoff.
Weird that you like an undrafted free agent at a UCLA. I would not, that plays tight end. I would not have had that in the office pool. Before we move on really quickly, I mean, people that listen to this pod, almost all of them know, right? You talk about 11 personnel, it's a tight end, 12, two tight ends, yep. 13, three tight ends. But to go back to that, I was actually going to ask you, if you're Cliff, at what point do you decide, or is it just up to Ben that you one day just say, I can't not do this. I have to involve this guy. At what point do you say, all right, if Ertz is going to play and he's healthy, because when they had signed him at his age with his injury history, you kind of thought Sinnott's going to have to play a lot. Well, that certainly wasn't the case last year. Knock on wood, it won't be the case this year because Ertz will be out there. But on Tuesday, August 26th, it's FanDuel Futures Day, a new holiday for football fans. It's 24 hours of deals on all your football season predictions. So take a flyer on the MVP race. Jaden Daniels is 10-1. Crown your champion in August, the Commanders, 19-1 odds. Or parlay your division winner dark horses like Washington together. Mark your calendars. This is your day for your hunches and hot takes, your calls, and your odds. Visit the FanDuel app today and start planning your futures bets now. Because Futures Day is one day, and one day only. FanDuel, play your game.
Must be 21 plus and present in Virginia. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
In terms of him forcing his way onto the field or what have you, or just using more, even in 12 personnel, maybe Bates isn't out there. Is that too much of a tell? That's an obvious pass. I would say no, because both of those guys can block. But, like, how do we get to that? Where the excuse, or the explanation is a better word, no negative connotation. The explanation has been, well, look at Zach Ertz's numbers. Like, how are you going to get Ben Sinnott involved? At some point this year, I would like the second round pick to be, like, running routes and getting some balls thrown his way. How do we get there?
Yeah, so I think that's predicated on Ben and the confidence that Cliff has in him. And, you know, like, I coach high school football. We talked about this the other day. Like, one of the things that I value a lot as a play caller, and I valued a lot when I was a player in the league and coaches valued from me, is they could trust me, right? They knew I knew the game plan. And I think there's an element of, like what I just talked about, with some of that route running nuance, is like, yes, you're explosive. Yes, you're strong. But can the quarterback trust that you're going to be on the right angle? I will tell you this about Zach Ertz, man. Everyone kind of wants to poop. Like, he has been, it's been a masterclass, man. And I nerd out about tight end play, but he has been so good at the fundamental stuff. And so it's like, when you're watching him and this is the guy you can play, he's always in the right spot. He always creates separation, always is maybe being a little hyperbolic, but the nuance, the understanding, and the savviness is there every single time. And so I think you just need to see that metric come up for a little bit for Ben. And so how does he do that? In practice, like when it's his opportunity in team, Zach's going to take a rest day. Can I maximize those opportunities? When I'm doing the practice squad scout team look for the defense, can I show that I'm evolving as a route runner? Like I think about my development arc from 10 to 12, where I became a starter in 2012. A big part of that was what I did in practice on practice squad. Kyle would see me and be like, hey man, like you deserve more opportunity because you're blocking better. You're running to the right spots on routes. And that was a big deal for me in terms of when I finally got my opportunity. So I don't want to cast my story onto Ben, but I think that's what, if I was advising him, that's what I'd recommend. It's like, hey man, in practice, let's show that you know exactly what's going on. You can get to these spots. We see the athleticism. Now let's put that finishing polished touch on it and force Cliff to say, man, you're doing so well. I can no longer ignore this. We need to get you on the field more.
So the last time we saw Zach Ertz, as a reminder, 16 targets, 11 catches, 104 yards in the NFC Championship game.
Monster.
I mean, just a massive tight end performance. And in that game, oh, by the way, we got the Ben Sinnott moment we've been waiting for.
Yeah.
Off of the right arm, I guess, of Tressway, right? He's left-footed punter and right-handed thrower. He's like some quirky baseball player. All right, offensive line. Most of the interest, I think, was on the back of the roster. They went a little lighter at center in terms of depth. Does that tell you that maybe to start the season, Allegretti is not going to start at guard and maybe they kick Wiley in and have Connerly play every snap? Or am I reading too much into it?
No, I think that's probably what I would say is you've got two guys that I think, you know, in Chris Paul and Wiley, who did really fantastic at guard this preseason. So now what I would say is the people often ignore this, people who aren't like super locked in, is that swing interior player is almost just as valuable as your starter. So now with Allegretti, I've got a guy who can play all three spots. I can play center, okay, play both guard spots. And I've got two other guys that can have some position flexibility at the guard position also. So I think getting Allegretti, who's played a ton of football, we've gushed over him on this podcast numerous times, like good football player, smart guy, pros pro. Like I love that he is in this mix and can kind of fill in any hole that it's presented. So I would say maybe, again, if I'm betting on this, I'd probably bet like, hey, you probably start Chris Paul or Wiley at one of these guard spots, the Sam Carsby right guard spot, and let Allegretti just kind of own that backup position role. But again, I think I'd be really comfortable with all of them playing because they did such a great job this offseason in terms of developing. So yeah, feel really good about that group, feel really good about that interior, feel really good about the depth. And I'd say ever so slightly, Nick Allegretti's probably going to back up because of that ability to play center.
As far as the reserves go, I just want to go back to someone you mentioned, Chris Paul, who was a seventh round pick way back in 2022. He has been a survivor, man. I mean, when you're a seventh round pick, you're fighting an uphill battle to make a roster. I remember his first camp wondering, you know, if he was going to be on the team. And then you fast forward multiple regimes later and four football seasons later, and it just seems like he keeps getting better. He has not really ever been a guy you go into the year feeling like you want to play 17 games, but I think you'd be comfortable with him filling in for a game or two here. I mean, he's gotten to a point now and he's earned it all. He's worked for it with a group that didn't even draft him that I think trusts him.
And it's a testament to him, man. Cause when he came in, he was athletic, he was powerful, but there was a lot of nuance that was lacking from his game in terms of run blocking posture, pass protection feel, understanding more complicated pass protection principles. And every single year, he's gotten better and better and better and better. And watching him in this preseason, I feel like he's taken maybe the biggest jump of his career. Like his feel in pass pro, he understands his footwork, he's understanding angles really well, and his strength and his explosiveness is so tremendous. So he's built himself, he's been given this opportunity, and he's constantly getting better and constantly improved. So hats off to him, man. Like, he looked like a totally different player. Like, if you watch his film from 4 years ago and watch the film of this offseason, it doesn't even look like the same guy. So huge props to him, man. Really happy that he's made these types of improvements.
26-year-old former 230th overall pick, Chris Paul, who's got a brother in the National Football League as well, and 17 games and 18 starts in now, just keeps getting better, to your point. I mean, how rare is that, by the way, that in year four you see that leap? Like, that normally happens sooner or doesn't happen, right?
For whatever reason, offensive linemen, there's like a year three bubble. Like, when you look at the analytics, and PFF puts this out and they're using their metrics, so take that for what it's worth. But usually you see a pretty significant grade spike in year three. And I think it goes back to just the importance of repetition at that position. You need to understand it's a strength-based, power-based position, but there's also a feel and an understanding and a nuance there that I think a lot of people don't understand. And so as you get more reps and as you spend more time in these more complicated pass protection schemes, in these more complicated run schemes, you see these developments with offensive linemen. So maybe he's a year late, quote unquote, but I think, yes, you're seeing a really nice progression from him. And I think that's also a credit to Coach Johnson and that offensive line staff, because they you see their ability to encourage improvement in players.
Cosme will be eligible to come off of PUP after four games, so potentially would miss Giants, Packers, Raiders, Falcons, and then could be back for the Chargers on the road and play his first home game against the Bears in early October. Whether that happens or not, you know, we'll see what kind of benchmarks he can hit along the way. Lastly, we've gone a little long on offense, but I wanted to hit every position with some detail here. Wide receivers. So yeah. This is the prediction that you made, right? That a sixth guy would not be kept. Nobody had separated themselves, and that they would shop around. They did not claim anybody, which is different than saying that they didn't put in a claim. When you're really good and you get to a conference championship game, you have 29th in the waiver order. So they weren't able to land anybody. We don't know if they attempted to. But do you think that a wide receiver is going to be brought in here in the next 24 to 48 hours to add to this group of five?
I would think so. And again, maybe they've already tried to do that, like you said, but it just seems like because of the style of offense you want to play, the hurry up, the depth that they got to last year, that you're going to need another body here at some point. So I don't know if they're thinking early on in the season, we'll just elevate from practice squad, but it seems like they need an extra body, and we'll see what happens. But I know they're going to be working hard to find the best possible person to fill that spot.
Terry McLaurin met with the media for the first time since getting his deal, was on the practice field, which was great to see on Wednesday. Noah Brown, who we saw do a pretty extensive workout and work up a lather before the preseason game, was on the practice field as well. I'm not a doctor. He looks like he's running and cutting pretty well, though. That's very encouraging.
Yeah, he looked great. He came to a couple practices early in the offseason. I was like, man, he looks like he's in great form, great shape. So whatever's going on, they haven't really specified exactly what's going on with the injury, but I think he's in great shape, and he looks like he's ready to play some football. So the big knock on him is it's never been his competitiveness, it's never been his toughness, it's never been his ability to play the sport. It's just about, can he stay healthy? And I think this staff's doing everything they possibly can to make sure that he's healthy and ready for a long 17-game season.
All right, so that's the offensive side of the equation. Let's dig into who made the roster on defense. We'll do that next on Take Command. Take Command is presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more.